All of us have a stake in preserving the natural world, and all governments should be basing environmental policies on peer-reviewed, evidence-based science. That's according to Sir Robert Watson, chair of the Intergovernmental Science Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services, or ITBES, which holds its sixth annual plenary session from the 18th to the 24th of March in Medellin, Colombia. ITBES is tasked with providing decision-makers with the best available evidence on balancing the needs of society and nature. It will present five major reports for approval by representatives of its 128 member states. Omar Musni asked Sir Robert how ITBES reports seek to inform decision-making at every level.
ITBES basically tries to provide current knowledge that's very carefully assessed to help policymakers, whether they're in government, the private sector or civil society, make informed decisions about biodiversity and ecosystems. So we assess the knowledge of to what degree is the biodiversity changing. This could be our forests, our coral reefs, cloud forests, etc. Why is it changing? What's causing those underlying changes? And how is it affecting human well-being? How is it affecting the way we produce food or clean water or energy, or affects, you know, our social behaviour? So we assess the knowledge that's in the literature and we present these findings to all relevant users of such knowledge.
So when you say you're talking about biodiversity change, is there a link between that and climate change, which we've all been hearing about a lot in recent years?
The answer is yes. Biodiversity and climate change are interlinked. Climate change is one of the major drivers of the loss of biodiversity. The other drivers are land use change. We've converted our forests or our grasslands or even our mangrove systems across the world into agricultural systems. Another one is over-exploitation. We over-exploit, especially in seas. We overfish the seas. Pollution is another one, both land-based, water-based and air pollution. And the last major driver is indeed climate change. Also, when we lose biodiversity, it can also affect climate change. So they're two very important environmental issues that also are what we would call development issues, because they actually do impact on what the average person in the street cares about: food, water, energy, etc.
And ITBES is meeting this month in Medellin, Colombia. So this is their sixth plenary session, I believe. And who does that bring together?
Potentially, it will bring up to 100 and something governments. We have 128 member states at the moment. Not probably all of them will attend, but probably at least 100 governments. Scientists will attend, NGOs will attend. And so we will have five major documents that we will be reviewing and hopefully will be approved by the plenary for publication. There are four regional assessments of what's happening in Africa, what's happening in Asia Pacific, what's happening in the Americas, what's happening in Europe. So four regional assessments of what's happening to biodiversity and how does it impinge on human well-being. And then we have a thematic assessment on land degradation and restoration. What's happening to land, soils, all over the world.
And who wrote these reports?
I think there's at least 700 scientists involved in these particular assessments. We write an assessment and we get it reviewed by the academic community. We take those review comments into account. We issue a second version. Governments and academia then look at the second version, again give us comments. We've now finished the main report, and they each have what we call a summary for policymakers, typically around 20, 25 pages. These summaries for policymakers take out the most relevant policy information from these multi-100-page documents, and they will be actually reviewed literally line by line, word by word, in plenary in Medellin. And at that stage, hopefully, these reports will be then approved by the governments. And so there'll be ownership, not only by the academic community, but by the governments and other stakeholders. That will be the basis for informed decisions.
So once these reports are approved, who should be looking at them and what should they be taking away from them?
Literally all governments around the world should be looking at them to see what are we saying. They should look to see why do we believe, what is the evidence that something's happening to their biodiversity? What's the range of policy options or technology options or behavior change they could effectively employ to try and stop the loss of biodiversity? the big international conventions on biodiversity, the Convention on Biological Diversity, the Convention on Desertification, the Ramsar Wetlands Convention, all of these should look. But also industry. Industry often relies on biodiversity and its ecosystem services, or it relies on water. So there are messages not only for government, but for the private sector, for the NGOs. While we are not policy prescriptive, we do not tell governments what to do. We give them what are the options. So again, this time, we will present to governments to what degree is biodiversity degrading or not, which policies have worked or not in the past, what policy options could they have in the future.
And so you mentioned the connection for policymakers in terms of the major intergovernmental conventions that we have. And you also talked about development. So is there a connection between these reports and, let's say, the Sustainable Development Goals and the Paris Agreement on Climate Change, which the world has come together under the United Nations?
Yes, we talk about three large policy frameworks. One is the so-called Aichi targets, which came out of a meeting in Japan on biodiversity, and there's 20 of them. So we talk about to what degree are different regions and sub-regions around the world, are they on course to meet these 20 Aichi targets? The second, we talk about what are the implications for biodiversity, for the Sustainable Development Goals, and there are 17. Biodiversity is very important for some of them, like food security, water security, human health. So we talk about to what degree are changes in biodiversity and ecosystem services, another word we use is nature's contributions to people, to what degree are they having an influence on our ability to make these Sustainable Development Goals? And the last policy framework that we're using is indeed the Paris Climate Agreement, and that is to what degree can biodiversity be affected by changes in climate, and to what degree can biodiversity potentially help solve some of the issues of climate change.
And what about the general public? Can they take anything from looking into these reports?
Yes, because all of us have something to do with nature. All of us have something to do with climate change. You know, and biodiversity is a complex word for many people, but they understand nature. So how can they be more efficient in their use of natural resources? How can we use water more efficiently? How can we make sure we don't have food waste? Also, the public can actually call on government and on the private sector to be more sustainable, not to cut down our forests, not to convert the mangrove systems into shrimp farms, not to destroy all the natural grasslands we've got. So while, yes, the main users of this report will indeed be governments, the private sector, the NGOs, especially the environmental and development NGOs, there are definitely messages for the public. And this is where the media is so important, in the way the media has actually got to the public how important climate change is and how the public can actually react to climate change and be more climate friendly. Equally, the media can get across to the public how the public can also be more sustainable in their use of natural resources.